Close. Just before we start, can you play some jazz?
Some jazz.
Yeah, I just something that sounds successful.
Okay. What about this?
Yeah, that's nice. No, I just want to take this opportunity to speak to the listeners before we have all the banter on the pod. Because sometimes when you have all the banter, you know, the excitement...
Things get filtered out.
Yeah. But I just wanted to speak to the listeners about our partner, Bond the Agency.
Oh, of course, yeah, the incredible Bond the Agency.
The most elite dating agency in London.
In the world.
You know, they go out and find you the perfect match. And this week I signed up to Bond Agency.
You signed up?
And it's a brilliant experience.
I'm not surprised.
You know, I had a wonderful 10-minute consultation with the gang at Bond the Agency. And they found out a little bit more about me. And I told them what I'm looking for. And now they've gone out into the big bad world. And they're going to go and find me the perfect match. And I just want to take this opportunity to say to the listeners of the pod, and there will be, I mean, a lot of the people who listen to this pod are very successful. But if you're single and you're looking for the one, you might have got to the age where your friends are getting married, having children, you're thinking, you know, how am I going to find this person? I've got a busy schedule.
These weeknights are lonely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they can be lonely. Luckily, I've got CrossFit and rugby, so my diary's stacked. Yeah. That's the problem. I don't have time to go and find the one, but Bond the Agency are going to help me. So if you're in the kind of predicament I'm in, why not click on the link in the podcast and have a 10-minute consultation with Bond the Agency, and they will literally go and find you one. And I'll keep you updated next week when I've met a couple of the smoking hot cheekers. They're going to go find me.
Well, Archie, that sounds incredibly exciting. I mean, Bond the Agency do guarantee to find you the one. So all you have to do is sign up. Takes 1 minute to leave your details. They'll give you a call, have a quick consultation, and then they get into the office for a bit more of a chat, and then they find you the one. I mean, the most premium, the most innovative dating agency on the market. And all you have to do is leave your details by clicking on the link in the podcast bio. So guys, if you're sick and tired of lonely nights, then all you have to do is click on the link and your life will change forever.
Wow. The music is brilliant. I would like to stay in this metaphoric bar forever.
What, do you want to stay for a bit more?
Yeah, I'll have a drink actually. Barman?
What do you want?
Barman, can I have a glass of Spring Angel, please?
Good choice, sir. More love!
Bloody free. Have I told you I've got a high basic salary? Making money.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Ribbiz Podcast. My name is Freddie Claude, and for episode 140, we have a superstar in store for you. And I'm not talking about you, Archie Gerson.
Ba-ba-ba! Superstar!
What the fuck was that?
Oh, it's just because I'm so excited.
Okay.
Can we do sound effects?
Yeah, do it again.
Ba-ba-ba-ba! Superstar!
Well done, that was good. How are you?
That was brilliant. I am so excited about our guest this week.
Huge.
We've done bloody well.
We've done
episode 140 of 140. The global award-winning podcast, the Rigbiz Podcast.
Yes, sir.
The favourite podcast of the well-known Made in Chelsea figures, Ollie Locke, and his husband, Garth. Big shout out to
Ollie
and Garth.
They'll be listening.
Yeah. Hello, guys. How you doing? You cheeky little devils. They absolutely love the podcast. And actually, what they really enjoy is people who listen to this podcast, they tag them in posts.
And message them. Yeah, they love that. Yeah. They absolutely love it. They just love the Rigbiz.
They're such good guys. Some people might think that they are minor celebrities. They're not.
They're huge.
They are. They're huge.
And they're big fans of ours, and we love them.
And
so thank you.
We absolutely love
them. And Liv Bentley.
We love their work. We love Liv Bentley. They're great guys. And we don't mention them enough, I don't think.
We don't. Yeah. You seem very hyper today. Have you been back on the pre-workout or something?
No, not at all. I am just really excited about our guest this week.
You look pretty knackered as well, though.
I'm feeling a little bit worse away. I had a big week of work last week. Client entertaining.
Whereabouts?
Was at Lords for a day.
Oh, yeah.
Great place.
Was it good?
Oh, yeah. Lords has got that kind of Henley Regatta vibe mixed with, I guess, a little bit of Wilderness Festival.
You know,
it's smart, but the undercurrent is loose. It's got a festival vibe.
Lots of champagne.
Everyone's quaffing champagne and getting a little bit tipsy.
So were you there the day Bairstow carried off that dressed up all the protesters?
Yeah, great chat from Bairstow. That's how you got to deal with them.
Yeah.
If anything, we've all learned a lesson. You see a dressed up oil in the street, just pick them up and throw them over.
Well, we know he's a big rugby fan, so that's probably where he got it from. We met him outside Twickenham. You interviewed him.
Yeah. For someone who's got such limited banter,
That was actually quite a good chat.
That was quite a good chat. Obviously, though, we are in a situation where England have now found themselves 2-0 down in the Ashes. Yeah. We know over half the team. I think 8 of the 11 follow you on Instagram. We've had 6 of them on the podcast.
Yeah,
Arch, we've had some messages from the fans saying it's time for Archie to motivate the masses. It's time for you to try and work your magic to give England the Ashes. Can we come back? Only one team in history has done it from 2-0 down to win 3-2.
You know what? If there's any team that can do it, it's this team. And you're exactly right. They need a motivational mix. So hit the track. Let's go.
Cucumber sandwiches.
Kaboom! Come on, England. Let's take these Aussies down. Who cares they're 2-0 up? We could beat them 3-2. Ever watched a football match? It happens all the time.
Poopy, don't post any more of your dog. It's time to knuckle down and put in a couple of centuries.
Duck it. You are absolutely killing it on the pitch and off the pitch. Your girlfriend is phenomenal. Keep going, my friend.
Seriously, you must know Robert Sacrepeke. He went to Derby. He's a bloody good lad.
I think you'll find it. Tim's a clog. How's that?
Call yourself Australia. More like you're a cricket team from Putney. Your banter smells.
And it's scary. What you did in the last test was terrible, but your work with men across the globe with micropenises is phenomenal. Keep up the good work on the micropenis front.
Ollie Robinson, you need to do more CrossFit. You need to get that chassis in shape.
England, we need to ball at them hard and fast.
David Warner, don't cry when you listen to this motivational video.
I can feel a victory. Can you? Come on, England.
Jimmy, let's use that cloud cover and pull some swing. I love cricket when it's the Ashes.
Stuart Broad, you possess the 3 C's. You've got a great chassis. Unbelievable chat. We all know you've got a lot of coin. Keep going.
Josh Tugg, I don't think I've ever heard of you. Just keep bowling that ball.
Johnny Bairstow, you're a phenomenal cricketer, but you need to work on the banter front. Travis Head, you play for Australia, so I don't like you, but you've got great stuff. Apparently you look like me. Well done.
Josh Hazlewood, watch out. We're coming for you. Not just England cricket, but Clapham. You better beware.
Mitchell Stark, you can do all the bounces you like, but we're coming to bat you off the crease.
England cricket, now you've had the motivational CD-ROM. You must believe, because we believe, and I believe. And when you win the Ashes, let's all celebrate it in Furness. I'll arrange a VIP area, and we can get loosey-goosey. Love and
so, Archie, it's time to reveal to the thousands upon thousands who listen each week to your words of wisdom, who is joining the CEO, the CCO.
To kick off Q3, Glenys, we've roped in one of the world's biggest rugby stars ever.
Most famous name ever.
It is none other than Brian Habana.
Oh, my God. All the way from South Africa. Yeah. World Cup winner, Tri Nations winner, multiplayer of the year winner. I mean, just a genius.
I'm going to be honest with you, Glenys. Yeah. I've got an erection right now.
You've got an erection? Well, mate, fucking put it away. Brian,
well, I'll
on.
Try, but it is Brian Habana.
Let's bring him in.
That is a phenomenal profile picture. Profile picture would be great on LinkedIn. Is that your LinkedIn profile picture?
No. LinkedIn is much more astute.
Can I get a copy of that photo? That was the photo for the hold. That was brilliant. That's that photo says I'm here for business.
We're ever not there for business, guys. Just trying to think. We're never not there for business.
I like the way you think, Brian. I think me and you are going to get on very well. I mean, I've been working in the city for over 15 years now. And interestingly, I know you are one of the fastest rugby players ever. I'm actually considered one of the fastest businessmen in the city ever. I've done deals. Wow. So, I've done deals over
breakfast.
According to Forbes, but also according to some of my best mates in the city. And I tell you, some of my best mates, they know business and they know how business deals happen.
Was that before or after you let your hair grow?
this hair is famous in the city. I was actually, Butch James is a big fan of my lid and also my top lip banter. I've actually had to copyright this look because I think so many people are trying to copy it.
So Butch makes it all of one fan then.
Well, I've actually got many fans, bro. I'm topping up to nearly 87,000 followers on Instagram, and I tell you what, the more followers I get, the happier I become.
Here we come. Yeah. Were you in the long room this past weekend?
No, but a lot of my dad's friends were, and I tell you what, they're great guys. They are great guys.
I can imagine that. How are you guys doing?
Oh, good. Yes, good, very good. Good to have you. Thank you so much for your time.
I mean, just on that business, rounding that off, Brian, you are now a big businessman yourself. You're CCO of a tech company.
Well, I, would have, what bought, are, I, would, I wouldn't call big business.
Well, you're CCO.
Trying my hand.
You're CCO. You work in the corporate world. Have you guys come across each other? You're self-proclaimed CEO and CCO.
No, I'm the chief chat officer of Clapham.
Oh, right.
I think Brian would be the chief communication officer. Is that right?
Is that actually a formal title? I actually haven't seen anywhere in any of my business engagement that a chief chat title is actually a description of any of the C-suite level executives I've been talking to.
I'll add you on LinkedIn.
It's made up and they get, you're unique. There's one in a million.
No, I tell you what, Clapham is a unique area of London. We are one of the most successful boroughs. Okay. And I've been at the helm for the last 7 years. Firstly as CEO, okay. But then we had a chief chat officer already in place, but his banter was shocking. He actually moved to Putney. Okay. He played hockey, it turned out. So that made a lot of sense. Okay, cool. And I sort of took up two positions.
Is your anagram a triangle or is it like a circle? What is your company anagram look like?
It's a guy doing a bicep curl with a kettlebell.
Yeah, I love that. Good vibes.
Talking about CEOs there, Brian, I saw an interview with you when you were saying at 23 you were making the salary of a CEO. What were your most exuberant purchases and would you do things differently with your money this time around? Maybe collaborating with Archie on a couple of his
hindsight products. Is the best vision, really. Good idea. So what is my most exuberant purchase? First big one was actually a Breitling watch that I bought, Black Steel Avenger. That was pretty decent. And I couldn't fathom that one would pay. And I mean, back then there was quite a lot of money for a 24-year-old. But yeah, a Black Steel Avenger Breitling watch. And then obviously, I think buying a house at 23 years old, some pretty a four-bedroom bachelor pad in Victoria was probably one of the worst decisions I've also ever made. It was all cool having a pool table and a games room and everything, but yeah, just the financial impact that had wasn't ideal. So yeah, I'd go a house at 23 years old. I probably should have maybe bought an apartment and invested that money and, you know, might not have to be chief client officer of a fintech company.
But a watch is a phenomenal investment. I mean, I'm actually wearing my Apple Watch today because I find like the Breitling or the Rolex, they don't give you your step count and your calorie intake, which is crucial for me when I'm trying to be successful. But a watch, you know, at 22,
well, not as crucial as charging that Apple Watch every night.
Yes,
you are
right.
At least works ongoing. Your kinetic sensors in terms of.
But the thing is, I have two Apple Watches, so I just swap one over at night. One gives me my reading of my sleep and recovery.
You are a big dog.
Yeah. Well, things are going well. Absolutely. Things are going well.
Things are going well. But
I've got a gym membership where I live in Clapham. I've got a gym membership in London. I've got two Apple Watches. I've got a six-figure salary. I've got a lot of followers on Instagram. I'm happy. I am one of the happiest guys you know.
You are still renting a two-bed flat, though. Brian bought his house when he was 24.
I'm renting because I still haven't found the perfect location in Clapham. That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I'm a single father. I've got to make sure that...
You can sell your two Apple Watches and you'll be able to get a massive place in Clapham, won't you?
Write that down. I might actually look into doing that. Let me write down, I need to speak to a broker today about selling the Apple Watches and actually getting a pad. I'm going to take some advice from Brian O'Banner.
Brian, have you been to Clapham before?
I have a couple of nights out in Clapham. I remember there's definitely one night in Clapham with Barbarians in 09 that was one of the better ones. Obviously, after dark, you have to be wary of what is going around you. I mean, you know, things can happen left, right, and center in some of those dark alleyways.
Yes.
But yeah, I think if you go with the locals, Clapham definitely produces some decent entertainment.
Well, you have one of the most world famous nightclubs, Inferno's nightclub. I'm sure you have frequented that, Brian. It's a carpeted nightclub. Never been there. It's got a fish tank.
He definitely has been.
And karaoke room.
He's definitely been at least twice.
I go every weekend, and it's again what a wonderful. It takes me back to my university days. There's some lovely cheekers in there, some lacrosse, netball, and hockey girls in there that absolutely love the rugby boys. So I go there with the rugby boys the whole time.
And tell me, I mean, what is the Apple Watch to give you stepwise? To Inferno's.
When I've gone there after a few beers with the rugby boys and I've taken my top off and I'm just dancing to Nickelback all night, I rack up about 25 to 27,000 steps and about 3,000 calories. But I'm doing burpees as well because I like to I think nothing says you're in good shape with your top off doing burpees in the dance floor while necking a few WKD blues. So I counterbalance the alcohol.
I can think of a lot more that does, but typically that's what does.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Brian, enough about Archie's partying. Let's go back in your career. We're already.
Let's make this a sensible podcast.
Yeah.
This is the third biggest
rugby pod in the world, biggest comedy pod in the world.
Award winning. Best sports comedy podcast
in the world.
Sorry, just quickly on that. Are you guys scared about Drew Mitchell, Matt Gitto, and Adam Ashley Cooper now doing good, bad rugby down in Australia? I mean, does that potentially threaten the third position?
Australia's a very small country. We're not worried at all.
Brian, also, just so you know, when the Good, the Bad, and Rugby need to do advertisement for Prime, who do they call? This guy over here. I'm on the phone. Mike Tindall, can you come do an advert? Yes, please.
Where were you on Friday?
On Friday, doing another advert for Good, the Bad, and Rugby.
You're welcome.
They need the banter.
Brian, let's go back in time, because 28 years ago, it was that famous 95 World Cup, as we come up to the one this September. You were in attendance, unbelievably, at the final.
Apparently,
you're the sort of the catalyst moment where you fell in love with the sport. What can you remember from that magical day?
So it was absolutely manic. My dad literally got last minute tickets, and I think firstly trying to get to Ellis Park was an absolute nightmare. But then sort of getting in there literally wasn't a space to sit. Our seats had been taken. I remember sort of sitting and getting passed from lap to lap, which was absolutely brilliant. But just the incredible atmosphere within that stadium, and hearing the iconic Nelson Mandela's name being chanted out when he walked out there with the number 6 Springbok jersey. And I think as a 12-year-old boy, you definitely feel like you're living in a dream. Like, is this happening? And I don't think you fully comprehend everything that's happening around you. But I mean, I was 12 years old. I probably shouldn't have been swearing some of the Afrikaans exploded lenders that were laying down at certain times in the game. But just seeing the euphoria, seeing the togetherness, the passion, for that. And then for me, one of the most incredible experiences in that day was actually when the final whistle went. And I actually don't think that a single person left the stadium.
Well, Brian, you're gone again.
Brian.
It's not our internet, because the internet in Clapham is some of the best globally. But
Clapham might become the high net worth capital of the world.
Yeah. We're looking at getting our own business district here, but it means having to build on the Clapham Common, which is
Elon Musk.
Elon Musk is a key investor in the area.
I mean, you guys should have to see if Clapham can host the Zuckerberg Elon Musk cage fight. That'd be extraordinary for Clapham, wouldn't it?
It would be great, and we're actually bidded for it. But the problem is, we need an actual arena, which is. Unfortunately, we've got other plans. We've got plans to put an 18-hole golf course on the Clapham Common, a rugby stadium to have our own rugby team, and the Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg fight is probably the back of the list, because predominantly we're a rugby borough. Potentially write it down.
I mean, as chief chat officer, Archie, I mean, I'm not quite sure you'd be able to get that on the line, would you?
Hey, you'd be surprised.
If push came to shove.
Brian, you'd be surprised. Honestly, sometimes people see me with girls and they're like, how did you do that? And I'd be like, it's the chat. It's not necessarily the look or what I can do with a kettlebell. Sometimes it's just the banter and the hair
and the vibrator.
Yeah.
It's not the fact that you had to pay them to be with you.
No, I mean, I don't know who you'd be speaking to. That was one night. And look, I was in Monaco and I was lonely and I didn't do anything with that. I just wanted to talk to someone. I don't know who you've been speaking to. That was a completely false story in the paper.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. And I also just want to say, the Clapham News doesn't report the right news. I mean, those photos of me are not true.
Yeah, the propaganda is ridiculous against you.
Yeah. It was taken from far away. If you come close up to it, it's decent. I mean, it's not massive, but it's decent.
Shortly after that incredible World Cup, you were obviously inspired to sort of, try and master the sport in your own right. You go to study at King's Edward's Joburg. But a bit like Archie, you struggled. Yeah, kind of. You struggled, didn't you? You were in the under 14 Gs. So how did you go from the G team to breaking into the first?
Your talent, surely. Unlike Archie, who's still struggling. I think I was only in the G team for one game.
Right.
From that first game, if memory serves me correct, I think I scored 2 tries and immediately went up to the Bs and As from then on in. So it was literally probably only because it was the first ever rugby game I'd ever played, Freddie. So, not being able to pass my left hand, obviously, started getting a bit better. I could start doing proper box kicks. So it was just that first entry, but I definitely didn't look back from there. It was all upwards from that point on, which I'm not sure we can say for Archie.
Actually, similar to Brian, I had two games for the C team, but then my mother purchased Andy Good rugby gloves, and I put those on, and from then on, I just moved up.
You never played rugby again.
Yeah, I played in the eights. I was the only guy with gloves. I had shoulder pads as well. I had a scrum cap. I also had a leg protection as well. Skins. I had all the kit. Yeah, I had all the kit. And then from then on, the motto came, look good, play good. And then I went on to do great things.
Not the motto, all the gear, no idea.
That would be correct for some people. But, you know, if you ask Bendy, who taught him, you know, how to pass with his left hand, he'll tell you it was Archie Kirsten.
Talking about school friends, you know, every South African who's been on this podcast always has a great story about teammates they played alongside who went on to play for South Africa or provincial club rugby. But what was your initiation? Because apparently the initiations at South African rugby schools, especially back in the day, were brutal as anything. We've had Butch James, we've had Skulk Brits, we've had Van der Merwe, we've had a lot of people come on and tell us their stories. What was yours?
Yeah, so I think we got jacked with a cricket bat. Ooh. Yeah. That was our initiation. So I say go shave as much hair off your body as possible, and then got a bit of a lashing with the cricket bat. So you had these massive big red, which became purple circles on your behind for about 3 weeks after that initiation.
Jeez,
it was pretty brutal. Yeah, pretty brutal. Not gonna lie to you. And it was almost at every stage. I had schoolboy and then university. Luckily, by the time I sort of cracked the open professional era in 2003, most of the initiation or the physical initiation had disappeared. School, university. University was pretty bad. University, they sort of put us naked on the change room floor, which was as cold as heck in the winters. And then you get the whole team just like clapping you, like literally your head bouncing, on the concrete. I failed to think about how long it was, but initiation in South Africa when we were young, it was pretty brutal.
Well, you say
it does not exist now anymore.
Well, Brian,
I did something similar with a girl once. It's not as bad as you. It sounds bad, but it's actually quite good fun.
Brian, you say initiations were gone.
But I guess the more slaps you get, that would be more painful. She only had two hands.
Well, she was slapping you?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. That's all she wanted to do.
Did you have to bear?
No. That was not the one. No.
Brian, you say initiations were done by 03, but when Butch James came on, he was telling us about the fact you have to be whipped when you play for South Africa. Now, you made your debut at Twickenham, aged 21, in 2004. At that point, against the reigning world champions, hopefully once more after this World Cup, but we'll wait and see. But who were you whipped by? Because that was still going on, right?
I think Brayton Paulson got me in 05, because obviously end of year tour, it was pretty hectic. So I think I only got initiated the following year. Obviously I was a little bit taller and weighed more than Brayton Paulson, but there was a lot of power in that body, obviously. I'm not going to lie to you. I probably shed a tear or two. It was pretty intense. I got a lot more respect. I mean, I had a lot of respect for Brayton as a young 22-year-old in the Springbok camp, but after that initiation, I got a lot more respect for him.
Commercial break.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Q3 is here. Summer is in full flow. And as a little treat, we're giving each and every one of you a free box of award-winning beers. 8 beers, 2 free snacks. All you have to do is click the link on our bio and you can order a free box of beers to your house right away. Treat yourself this summer. You're welcome.
Philippe van der Merwe got it by Bakis Bota. We're also pitching I don't know if you know this, but we're pitching with the help of a few of the South Africans that come on the podcast to ITV7 over here in the UK for a reality TV show. It'll be me and Bakis Bota in the outback, and it's bets on how long I'd last with him. How long do you think? I mean, I think Philippe van der Merwe said that we'd last half an hour. How long do you think I'd last?
Bakis is absolutely brilliant venue. You would, I reckon, easily a week.
Oh,
no, he is. I promise you, he, no, honestly, Samit Bucky's, by the fact that he loves the outdoors, anything animals, nature related, you are going to be in his element anyway. But he honestly has some of the best banter.
Oh,
it is as dry as it comes. And I think you'd probably, you'd definitely play off against each other, hey? Which I think would potentially create a little bit of synergy. I mean, I'd literally only be able to get 7 minutes in Outback with you, Archie, before I'd,
I don't know, Brian. Do you like being tickled? Do you like being tickled?
No. No, no, I'd throw the white flag in. Also, just remember your Apple Watch is not going to last for as long as the time you'll spend in the Outback with buddies.
I'll have to buy a load of them. I'll buy a load of them.
Or man, you just buy a solar battery to charge every time it is the Outback. You'd have a lot of sun, Archie. Let's be innovative enough.
Yeah, come on. You must be a businessman, Archie.
You don't have to throw money at the problem. You don't have to throw money the whole time at a problem.
Well, that's what my dad did, and he's very successful. He's had five marriages, and I mean, he was very fortunate. I'd be honest with you, he was very lucky. At 40, he made all his money. Well, both his parents died in a car crash, he made all his money there.
Well, Brian, obviously going back to that debut, you lost at Twickenham, but you scored, I believe, with your first touch. I mean, incredible. But 3 years later. 3 years later, you were playing against England again. They were still reigning champions, but you know, had something to say about it. You destroyed them in the group stages, and then you come up against them in Paris in the final. Archie's been arrested trying to get into the ground.
That was
a different story. But how did you guys celebrate that night? Because what an evening, what an amazing moment for South African rugby.
I think for us as a group, I think you, as any journey, you always remember the good times, but we had quite a number of interesting times in that road to winning the World Cup. You know, a year prior, we'd lost 49-0 to Australia in Brisbane. We got absolutely thrashed by the All Blacks in South Africa in Wellington. And I mean, there were talks of John Smith, you know, not being the right captain, Jake White not being the right coach. So I think for us as a group, there was obviously a lot of drinking out of that very special cup that night. For me personally, my now wife, then girlfriend, had actually flown over specifically for that weekend. So she arrived in Paris on the Saturday morning, and she actually flew out on the Sunday morning. And we just, I mean, obviously there was a lot going on in the hotel. All the family, all the friends were there, but she literally had to be at the airport at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. So we literally went from the team room, packed bags, and went to the airport. And a lot of guys then went on to further celebrations at the Eiffel Tower on the Sunday. I was trying to be a little bit more cognizant of the fact that I was up for an award that Sunday evening at the RP Awards. So I didn't want to get there with a hangover. But yeah, it was an epic night of celebration. I think being able to have family and friends who'd been on your journey for as long as, you know, you've been a rugby player, being there celebrating. So my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister, you know, my then girlfriend was there, all the family, all the friends, and we literally got to have this very intimate engagement in our team room at the hotel, which was pretty brilliant. And I think we only ended there anyway at like 2 o'clock with the formal proceedings before everyone then went their own way. And yeah, like I said, it was an epic night. Some of the photos, which will not be shared on any social media platform, but drinking out of bowl, given what you'd achieved, you know, winning the pinnacle of your sport was pretty epic.
Well, back in South Africa, I can imagine the celebrations were even more, you know, heartening and warming because you're alongside the likes of Nelson Mandela. How incredible is it?
Yeah, I think for us as a group, you know, we've been, and I mean, social media was the last thing, you know, on everyone's plate. I think I was trying to count how many Facebook friends I was getting in 07, really. But in 07, we were just so far removed from South Africa. So our team room, you know, had all these faxes that had been sort of sent to us and letters, because literally people were still writing letters and sending faxes in 07. So we were really removed from, you know, how much support we were getting back home. And much of our group of 07, you know, was inspired by what happened in 95. But I think for us, it was only on arriving back to South Africa and seeing the absolute mayhem about how huge, like how magnificent the celebrations were and just how much of an impact we were having. And on our trophy tour, you know, witnessing kids in the rural townships in the Eastern Cape running a barefoot behind their bus, you know, behind our bus, you know, just to get a glimpse of the trophy, just to get a glimpse of hope. was absolutely brilliant. And I think for all of us that had been a part of that journey up until the 20th of, you know, of October 2007, we didn't understand how incredible that impact was. You know, we were on the other side of the fence in N95, but I think for us witnessing that was absolutely priceless. You know, it far outweighed all the effort, all the celebration that we'd had been able to achieve in Paris, because something like that, you just can't put a price tag on, even if Archie would want to put a Apple Watch price tag on it.
How many Apple Watches? I don't care. I'd pay it. For that experience, I'd come.
Brian, did you get to meet Mandela then? Or
yeah, a few times. I think we were very fortunate. You know, Nelson took an incredible liking to sport and rugby in particular. So we'd actually seen him before we'd left South Africa. And then we were fortunate enough that he was in Paris, I think ahead of the England game, the group stage game. We went to go see him at his hotel in Paris. And then we were fortunate enough to get to his residence with the trophy on getting back to South Africa. And again, you know, as iconic people come, you know, you don't get bigger than Nelson Mandela. So I think for us to share that moment with someone who'd given our country, you know, so much in terms of unity, so much in terms of coming together, that was pretty special. And I think we were all, you know, chomping at the bit just to get a photo with the trophy and Nelson Mandela, which sits in a very special place in my house at the moment.
How aware were you at that time of you becoming like a superstar in the sport?
Yeah, that was probably because I raced against a cheetah, Archie. Not really because of my rugby playing ability.
Just to say, we did bid for that on Clapham Common. That didn't come off. And not even my chat could get us. We couldn't get the license for the cheetah.
There is also no sort of rule book that teaches you how to deal with this. I think being able to be surrounded by the right people, supported by the right people, respecting the opportunity that I've been given, understanding the platform that was bestowed upon me, and trying to utilize that as best as possible. So I try to avoid, you know, getting my name in the papers like yourself, Archie, for going to Infernos in Clapham, or doing the wrong things on a number of times.
Well, that's the problem. I've been hanging out with Francois Hugo too much. Yeah. That's the problem.
He's a naughty boy.
Yeah. Me and him, we just like to, work out.
He loves the camera.
Yeah.
I mean, it's at least, I think hopefully he's actually doing it just to make himself look even better, Archie, because I think, I mean, he doesn't have a hair out of place in comparison with your mop on top of your head at the moment.
Well, me and Francois, we meet up quite a lot. We like to do Instagram stories together. We just like to go to places that are really expensive and take photos and just say, one of my favorites of Francois is he'll just he'll be at home in his plush house, and it will just be like a bottle of Moet watching a film, and he'll just be like, lovely Sunday session. And I just think, yes, that's a guy who's successful.
I mean, with a rig like his and looks like his, he would unfortunately, Charlie, Archie put you to shame quite a bit then.
I tell you what, we've had some nights out and I've put him to shame.
No, Archie.
I'm telling you, Brian. He's, in a way, I think.
I struggle to believe that.
I think so, Francois, he's been on the pod. He looks up to it. He
is that with the Made in Chelsea crowd?
Yeah, yeah. Me, Francois, and the Made in Chelsea guys. We all go out, you know. There's nothing better than crossfitting with Francois Huber on the Clapham Common at 7 o'clock in the morning. Just me and him, just tackling the battle ropes. It's a great feeling.
Well, last time, you know, we saw Francois in a professional environment was playing for the Barbarians a couple of months ago. I think he's out of a job. So Francois, we will try and help. You know, Archie, you've got quite a good track record of finding people contracts.
Yeah.
But talking about the Barbars, 2 years after winning the World Cup, you were playing for the Barbars in their most famous ever victory in the last 60 years when you beat the All Blacks for the first time since 1973. Yeah, you scored a hat-trick as well. I mean, quite incredible. But forget all those amazing achievements.
I'm
you had to share team room for a week with Andy Powell. I mean, how was that?
That was almost as good as Archie needing to share the Outback with Bucky Spurter. Andy Powell was absolutely brilliant. I mean, as team spirit went, he was leading the charge right from the get-go. I think his envelope that you get when you come into camp was probably done by the Tuesday. So we got on the Sunday. I think his envelope was done by the Tuesday. And he was taking some loans from various other players within the team before our envelope on the Saturday. But so unfortunately, we did not have a golf cart to drive us around Richmond. and go on any highways, which was a bummer. I was really expecting a little bit more excitement, but he was brilliant, Vandy. And we had, I mean, from Andy Powell to Drew Mitchell, Matt Guitar, Rocky Alson, George Smith is one hell of a team player on a night out. He is as good as they come. You know, we had Bismarck, Bismarck Duplessis, we had Victor. No, it was, yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you. The win was obviously the cherry on the cake, but the cake itself was, oh, better than anything you'd find in Clapham, that I can promise you.
I'm not going to disagree with you. That sounds pretty phenomenal. It's a shame it wasn't in Clapham. Again, I've let the borough down. I've let the borough down. We could have got that going.
One of Archie's favourite quotes, as he said earlier, is look good, play good. Now, mentioning the All Blacks there, yeah. I've read you said that Dan Carter was the best smelling rugby player you ever came across. He just smelled incredible. Was he the best smelling rugby player you ever played against? And is that the secret to being a decent player? Do you agree with the quote?
Feel good, smell good, I think is always a good thing. If you're not smelling good, you're not going to be a good attraction point, in my opinion.
Yep.
But I think, I mean, Dan Carter being a Louis Vuitton ambassador. Being a Louis Vuitton ambassador, you know, probably just amplifies the fact that he is such a good-smelling, good-looking rugby player. I mean, there's few rugby players. You talk about global superstars. I mean, I can't even think there's any soccer stars that, in terms of Louis Vuitton, you know, got an ambassadorship like Dan Carter. So I'm not quite sure whether he was wearing the Louis Vuitton perfume back then already, but yeah. Look, as good-looking and as good-smelling as it comes.
Write that down. Just... contact Louis Vuitton, see if they want to sponsor the podcast.
Okay. Well, I mean, you'd first need to say, just Archie, I mean, if you're going to contact Louis Vuitton, you know, obviously they're part of the greater Mohit and Hennessy. It's not Moet. Moet. So I'd actually get the pronunciation of the name right first.
Right on before
you go contact them,
right? Write on the email that just say we're good friends with Brian O'Banner and Dan Carter, and just say, can we have a conversation?
Okay.
And, yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. CC in Brian O'Banner.
Okay.
And charge him for the introduction. Take 10% of Brian's fee. Okay.
2009 was arguably the greatest year of your career, Brian, because you also beat the Lions in that epic series. You win the Tri-Nations. But can you take us through that series? Because it was the most physical, most confrontational series we've seen in modern times. But were there any wonderful memories post? Did you guys get together a bit like the Ashes? Were people coming together afterwards and loving each other, having a couple of beers? Or was it still quite horrible?
Honestly, as much as the on-field rivalry was pretty epic, I was expecting a lot different off-field. And I just think there was a lot of animosity, you know, from the get-go. There really wasn't, you know, much engagement. It was, I think, after that Durban test and the manner in which it panned out, you know, given how much talk the Lions had done, we, you know, coming away with the victory was great. But we honestly thought there'd be a little bit more of a sort of friendliness or engaging environment. Myself and Hugo Monya sort of have a bit of a crack over the fact that he actually didn't want to swap his jersey with me. And I was like, what's going on here? So there was a lot of animosity, I think, given the fact that with that second test and how it panned out, obviously with the Ronagara incident, but there was just the physically bruising on-field battle, and that sort of did unfortunately go off field as well, and there really wasn't much, you know, harmony and engagement post, which was disappointing. But again, the fact that, you know, you get to experience the Lions series, you know, get to experience that sea of red running out in your home stadium was as epic as it comes. So disappointing that we weren't able to enjoy each other's company, but also given the ferocity of the on field battle, you can just think why there was, you know, animosity off field as well.
Of course. Well, a couple of years later, you head out to France. You say, enough's enough. I want to go make some serious, serious cash this time. We've spoken to loads.
I want to buy a couple of Apple Watches. That's what I was thinking.
we've spoken to loads who said that the culture, when you get there, it's very hard to adapt to when you're coming from, you know, very serious professional rugby in South Africa, Ireland, England. Were there any things which sort of surprised you when you got there about them sort of maybe drinking wine over lunch, as some have said, and, you know, sort of taking things quite seriously, everyone having a pack of fags?
That era, yeah. Johnny Wilkinson, Matt Guitar, Drew Mitchell, Bucky Spurter, Don Rousseau, Jean Smith, Juan Lobé, Matthew Bustill, or the Armitage brothers, Sheridan, I mean, Carl Heyman, Ali Williams. It was just ridiculous. Like, it was, it was ridiculous, right? And I think for all of us, and you know, I had to chat to the legendary captain Joe Finico, and the expectation was you're going to get there and you're going to be involved in this extremely professional environment that for me was important in the build up to the 2015 Rugby World Cup. But then experiencing it for that first week where Bernard Laporte literally, you know, only arrived on a Monday or Tuesday, potentially for 45 minutes because he had to get back up to Paris. I mean, the training was as substandard in terms of the coaching perspective as it got. And luckily, we did have this incredible group of, you know, world-class players that was willing to push each other both in the gym. We had a container for a physio room where in the second year, the ice machine broke and Murad Bujalal wasn't willing to buy a new ice machine. So we didn't have ice in our physio room in my second year. You know, for a team like that to then go on and win Europe three times in a row, it's as starkly contrasting as you get. But just really went to show that, you know, if you do get a group of guys together, you know, willing to put balls to the walls and make sure that the on-field performances, you know, outweigh the mercenary tags that are put on them, that you can achieve some pretty epic things.
Brian, talking about France, and just to finish off, and thank you so much for giving us your time. You're an absolute legend.
Thank you very much.
You know, you're a hero amongst men, and we can't wait to get you over to Clapham.
Right, yeah, just send him a couple of Apple Watches. Keep him
send him a couple of watches, okay. Finally, obviously, we go to France.
And charges. If you're going to send Apple Watches, just send some charges as well, please.
And some charges.
Two watches, right, seven charges.
Seven charges.
He'll probably want to charge them all around his house.
Okay, universal plug.
And a battery bank. UPS, please.
And a couple of bottles of champagne.
But just to finish off, obviously, huge World Cup this September, Brian. Who's your money on?
Oh, so with my heart, I'm obviously hoping that South Africa can go out there and do something that has never been done before in South African rugby, winning back-to-back Rugby World Cup. So, you know, the 95 team tried in 99. We tried in 11 in New Zealand. Failed dismally, getting knocked out in the quarterfinals. I do believe this is probably going to be the toughest World Cup to win, particularly if you're on our side of the draw. So let's see how this weekend goes. But I'm quietly confident that the Springboks can go to France and do something special.
Yeah.
Does he have chat?
No chat.
Becky's Bota.
Lots of chat.
Skulkberger.
Lots of chat. Great chat.
Sia Khaleesi.
Brilliant chat. Epic chat.
Yeah.
Jean de Villiers.
Wise chat.
Danny Cipriani.
No, he's got good chat. I'm not quite sure it's as good as his dancing, though. I mean, Sips's dancing is just... I mean, I would take Sips's dancing over his chat any day.
Victor Matfield.
Nah, okay, chat.
Jamie Roberts.
No, he doesn't have great chat.
Joe Rocococo.
No, he's too quiet. He's a good man, but he's just far too quiet.
And finally, Andrew James Powell. Andy Powell.
Oh, brilliant chat. Couple of summons. Take the winning card. Give me the card.
Brian Habana, you've had lots and lots of chat, mate. Thank you so much for coming on. Come on the Springboks. Come on South Africa.
Brian.
And we'll see you soon in Clapham.
Love and champagne.
And maybe less, it's like 40 degrees over in the UK at the moment, Archie, and you're wearing a hoodie.
I'm on a chassis thread. I'm just trying to sweat it out.
I'm not seeing any sweat because your hair's actually gotten worse as the podcast got on. I'm very worried.
Brian, thank you so much.
Love and champagne, Brian. Ding, 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 ding. They smashed Q2. They surely can't do it in Q3. No, we can.
What
we just gave you Brian Habana on a plate delivering some bloody good C.H.A.T. Cat.
Well, Archie, we completely forgot. With the start of Q3, with your new business deals, with this girlfriend, hopefully you're going to go on a date with you on the agency. Yeah. She could be the one. Finally, we progress Archie Kurz and we get him the lady thanks to Bond the agency. But all the ruckus of that and the ashes and everything else going on, we've forgotten Wimbledon's here.
We're almost
a week in. It's been incredible. And it's just, are you going? And we're only 10 minutes down the road.
Yeah, I'm actually test running my brand new white suit at Wimbledon this Sunday.
Awesome.
Can't wait. It's a brilliant place to network.
So good.
Even on the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, never stops. What you find is you have the same kind of caliber of people you have at Lords. It's a great place to have a Sunday sesh.
It really is. Yeah, only 10 minutes away as well. Worst case scenario, jumping an apron.
The best thing is I can just walk back to Clapham and that way I can get my step count in.
Well, that sounds very exciting, Archie. We wish you the best of luck with that. Also, we got the Ashes is starting again, that third test, which now they've listened to your mixtape, they will
I've got a feeling a victory's coming. And, you know, it's Q3. It's the beginning of Q3, Clodis. So it's a very exciting time of the year. Q3 is always a mixed bag because, you know, people do tend to go away in the summer.
They
take their foot off the gas. Not me. That's where I get the edge on my competitors. It's a little secret. I mean, I will be revealing a lot of these secrets in the book that's coming out at Christmas. How to Succeed in the City with Archie Cousin.
And the subsequent
tour. And the tour that I'll be touring around the country and the United States of America.
Wow, you got that.
In 2024 and 2025. So, it's just one of those times of year where you really got to take your opportunities. Before you know it, it'll be cold, dark and rainy and you think, what happened to the summer?
Well, Archie, talking about taking opportunities, every single one of us who is involved in this podcast or, you know, of the 1,000 listeners every single week, we want to wish you the best of luck for your date later this week with the lady from Bond the Agency. We're really hoping that she'll be the one. And if not, they will get you the one.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We're really excited to see how that goes.
I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a successful guy. And when you're successful, you get other people to do the work.
Yes.
You know, and you want to go find the one, you pay someone else to go and do it. And I know a lot of people have used Bond, who listened to the pod and had great success. I'm just fingers crossed I don't get an erection like I did before the Brian and
Matt. Well, I hope not. That'd be very weird.
Yeah, I mean, it would be embarrassing if I've stood there. But luckily, I have got a technique. I don't know if you know this, but you can just tuck it up.
Oh, you tuck it in the waistband.
Yeah, tuck it in the waistband or the belt. Don't pull the belt too hard.
No, you may lose
your
belt.
A friend at school did that and it was not pretty.
Right, well, on that thought, Archie, we'll let you go and get ready for the date in a couple of days' time. Enjoy Wimbledon this weekend. Enjoy the networking. Enjoy the cricket. Yeah. Thank you for motivating us all. And we'll see you next week.
And to the lovely listeners, have a wonderful Q3. I hope it progresses very positively. And we'll see you next week. And we've got another wonderful guest. Looking forward to it. High five. High five.
You're welcome.
Great pod.
It isn't working. I'm a tidal wave of question marks and you're just surfing. Leaning into me like it's a knot. It's so crazy lately. You just understand my feelings. Make me see I'm capable and fine. And feeling beautified tonight. I'm ready to dive. Maybe it's the loving in your eyes I'm here, see through. And maybe it's the magic in the wine I'm feeling loose. Maybe it's the fact that every time I fall, I lose it all. But you got me from my head to my feet. And I'm ready to dive.